Today on Maine Calling, our Passions and Pastimes series continues with fiber arts. Fiber arts are everywhere, from quilts and felted vessels found in fine art museums to outrageous crochet creations on Gen Z social media feeds. There's just something about working with your fingers that feeds the soul. It's meditative and creative at the same time. And fiber arts are most definitely a Maine thing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with some of the people at the center of the fiber arts community in Maine about why they are so passionate. We'll find out about the history of some of these skills and which fiber arts seem to be taking off in popularity. And we'll discuss the line between hobby, craft, and art, if there is one. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. By Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. From crochet to felting, stitching quilts to hooking rugs, fiber arts means so many things to so many people. We'll learn about the different ways working with fiber is practiced in Maine and why it's so popular. This show is part of our series, Passions and Pastimes. Joining me for the hour, Christine Mackey, who is Executive Director and founder of Maine Fiber Arts. She spins, knits, and is an accomplished photographer. And Chris Antonak, who is a fiber artisan who spins, knits, hooks rugs, and creates footstools. She is the vice president of Maine Fiber Frolic, which is coming up in 2 weekends. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you obsessed with a fiber art or two or three? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Christine, when we talk about fiber art, some people might think of knitting. I do. Others sewing, but there are so many categories. Tell us what you include when you think about fiber arts.
Well, first of all, thanks for doing a program about fiber in Maine. We like to think of the whole community that is involved in the fiber. So the people who are making things, the artists and craftspeople, the museums and galleries that are showing work, the yarn shops and basketry supply places, and the manufacturers and the learning centers. And people are doing these days embroidery, quilting, felting, rug hooking, and sculpture using fiber techniques, and knitting. There's sewing garments and clothing. There's really a very broad field and very exciting field.
Christine, there's probably no way to say this for sure, but I'm going to make you take a guess. How many people you think are fiber artists in Maine?
Whoa.
I once looked at a census and around 2019 or so, and there were 1,100 working farms in Maine, mostly owned by women for fiber. So I thought that was an interesting statistic. My goodness, with our long, long history and traditions in this field, and all of the different communities that are passing on skills, it's hard to find people who are not involved with fiber. Fiber arts throughout the country are second only to gardening as America's favorite pastime. So it is huge.
And I'm sure there are many fiber artisans who are also gardeners. Chris Antonak, I want to turn to you. One thing I love about your story is that you started, as many of us do, as a knitter, and then something just happened. So tell us your origin story. How did you become the person you are?
Well, was in a knitting class in Massachusetts, and they had a workshop available to do needle felting, which I really didn't even know what needle felting was, but I signed up for it because it sounded like it might be interesting. And I was introduced to roving, which I'd never even heard of roving. And roving is just basically unspun, usually wool, that when you needle felt with it, you use a kind of a barbed needle and you do multiple pokes. And what it ends up doing is felting that wool together. And then you can make sculptural 3D items out of it. So I was entranced with roving. And then I started thinking about, well, spinning. So then I found a spinning group and I went and sat with the spinners and watched them spin. And they were so generous and kind and talked to me. And I got intrigued with that. And then I took a ride up from Massachusetts to the Maine Fiber Frolic. And this was before I even moved to Maine. And I couldn't believe my eyes, the breadth of items that were available at the Maine Fiber Frolic. And so then I just slowly but surely got totally addicted. And now I am a fiber addict. In fact, I have a sign in my studio here that says fiber addict. And you know, I am addicted, I have to say, but I love it. It's a great addiction.
Christine, who would you say qualifies? I mean, who tends to take classes? Who tends to participate in the Fiber Frolic? I don't want to put any kind of categories on, but are you finding artists? Are you finding teachers? Are you like who do you keep running into again and again?
So this is at the Fiber Frolic. Or
Fiber Frolic or events where you all are sharing ideas, taking a class. Who's going to be sitting next to you in class?
I think people who are creative and who are love to make things with their hands. People that tend to just want to go shopping and go to the mall are probably not the people that would be so interested in the workshops and the spinning and so forth. But the Maine Fiber Frolic has broad appeal to really everybody. You don't even have to be a maker to enjoy the Maine Fiber Frolic, because we have opportunities for people to buy already made products and soaps and lotions and all kinds of things, in addition to the whole wide world of fiber.
It does sound like there's no end. Christine, no, I want to ask you about the world of fiber since the pandemic. You know, we knew that a lot of people bought bicycles during the pandemic, but we also know that a lot of people bought yarn during the pandemic. We know that a lot of young people started crocheting, and I'm not quite sure why it's crocheting and not knitting, but crocheting seems to be the thing on social media. Has that abated, or is that just continuing, Christine Mackey? Is that continuing to go strong and even grow?
I think a lot of people had a little bit more time during COVID pandemic to sit down and try things that they hadn't before, and making bread and getting out in the garden, getting around their homes, and knitting and spinning were all brought to the fore, which is a great thing. And I see it continuing. I just had a young woman come in yesterday who wants to start a knitting circle in the town of Damariscotta. She works at Fernals, and she said she needed to learn how to knit in order to do that. So I think people are learning along with their reverence for getting back to the land. That movement is still shaping as people want to be more green and more friendly and learn where their clothing is made from and get back to some of the skills that our people before us were using every day to make the cloth and make their lives.
Yeah. Chris, what do you want to add to that?
Well, I think the pandemic time was, of course, it was very isolating for people and created hard times for people to get through emotionally. And knitting and spinning and these other kinds of repetitive motor movements have been shown to be very, very relaxing to our nervous systems. And I have read that people that go into deep meditation situations, their brains create beta waves that give them a sense of peace and relaxation. And it's also been shown that when people are engaged in repetitive motor movements that are required during knitting and spinning and so forth, your brain also goes into those beta wave motions. But the lovely thing about fiber is after you've done with your beta wave experience, you've got a sock or a hat or something else like that. So, you know, you get all the benefits, but then you also get a tangible item. So, I mean, it's just, it's a, and, you know, people that go through hard times, a lot of times their knitting will get them through it, knitting or spinning.
I think it's really interesting. Yeah, Christine, go ahead.
Maine is really known for its handcraft, the strong woodworking tradition, and all the beautiful people who really love to practice these arts and take them very seriously and study and work and do things.
I want to ask you about something you said about how this is something that generations of people did for necessity, not for joy and pleasure and meditative pastime. But I'm wondering if there's sort of a generational shift that there were generations that had to do this. And then there were generations that maybe said, you know what, that's what my grandmother did, and I'm not going to do that. And now are we sort of coming back and people saying, wait a minute, did we lose something by not having everybody learn how to do these skills? Chris, you're nodding.
Well, I'm just thinking of what you're talking about, the doing things out of necessity. I'm a rug hooker, and rug hooking is one of those activities that a lot of people really don't know that much about because it's not as portable as knitting. So you don't see somebody sitting on a park bench, you know, hooking a rug. But back in the day when, and this, I think rug hooking began in, Christine, you might help me with this, in Northern Maine, basically, or in Maine, people would have burlap bags and they would get cut up clothes and their spouse might create a hook for them out of a nail or a metal fork and create a hook. And the probably women would hook rugs out of the old clothes and put those rugs on the floor to keep their houses warm and also to create beauty. So, you know, things started for one reason and then evolved into something else. But, you know, all these things, knitting, creating warm clothing for people, that was, you had to have that, especially in these cold climates where we live.
Yeah, I've seen some hooked rugs that have Civil War uniforms in them. They're just remarkable. We have a Facebook post here from Paris House Woolworks. I wanted to mention that rug hooking is an art that has origins in Maine and the Canadian Maritimes, first being practiced in homes using repurposed materials in both practical and creative ways. It has always been an art, always. But much like work that has been perceived as women's work, it has not always been publicly regarded as art. I think rug hooking, and with the support of insightful art institutions, is now coming into its own as a recognized fine art. And Christine, I'm wondering if you believe the same thing, that it's taken too long, but now finally fiber arts have their due in fine art museums.
Well, of course we do. We are 24 years here at Maine Fiber Arts with this beautiful gallery in Topsom, and we have tapestries in the front room right now by Morris David Dorenfeld. People have been making work for 40, 50 years in the state. And we've had shows since the year 2000 with knitting and felting and quilting and all kinds of different media that are really beautiful works of art. And to me, there's not a difference between making handcraft and making something usable and taking an idea from that and making it speak about something larger. And yeah, there's a lot of, it's a thriving movement. And we once did a project called the State of Fiber, where we had exhibits and museums in 115 places around the state. We had handmade paper and presqu'île and functional sculpture at the Hay Gallery in Portland and stuff at the Portland Museum of Art. So yeah, it was, I remember taking slides around to gallery owners and saying, you know, look what's going on in fiber now. And they'll say, well, are you know, what are you knitting mittens? And I'd say, well, I knit mittens, but take a look at this. And they were just astounded, going, oh my gosh, okay, let's give them a show.
Chris.
So.
Chris Antoinette, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hi. Well, I did definitely want to hop in and talk about the Maine Fiber Frolic that is happening on June 1st and 2nd, which is a Saturday and Sunday. It always happens on the first weekend of June, and this is our 22nd annual Maine Fiber Frolic. So this has been going on for quite a number of years, and I do have an alliterative sentence to tell you, which is it is a fabulous family fibery fun festival.
That's good. You got
and,
that done.
Isn't that good? And we have over 80 vendors coming with products for people that like to knit, spin, rug, hook. We also have finished items. So there's, and most of the items that come to the Maine Fiber Frolic are created, as Christine was saying, from people that have small farms. So the yarns are most likely coming from people who have flocks that have shorn their sheep and sent the fleece off to the mill to get spun. They also will dye the product themselves. So we have artisan dyed yarns that are really beautiful and very different from the kind of things that you might find. And I'm not putting it down, but you know, at Walmart or you know, those other Hobby Lobby and places like that. So, and there's definitely a place for those kinds of yarns, but it's not necessarily what you would find at the Fiber Frolic. So,
I'm going to go. Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris. And we've got information about that going into our newsletter. Well, I'm going to go to Frederick, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Jennifer, and hi, Christine. I want Christine to talk about the genesis of this brilliant idea she had. We go back, my wife and I go back with Christine and a wonderful muse that was in her life back in the early 80s. And I'll put Thankful on, that's her name, to just begin to paint this incredible picture that Christine will elaborate with.
Well, hi, Christine, first of all. We discovered Christine and another artist, Richard Lee, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and walked up this long, narrow stairway. I think it was the third floor. And at the top, it was like stepping into a magical place. It was full of various forms of fiber art. And it was just strikingly amazing to see such creativity in one big room. So, Christine, I know over time you've created what you just referred to as the fiber tour. I hope there'll be another one. But it is a kind of art that had been lost, and I'm so happy to see it being revived in the way that it is. Even
great. Great. Thank you so much, both of you, for calling in. Thankful and Frederick. Christine, anything to say before we have to go to a break?
It is a big cornucopia of fun things we've had going over many years with different artists. So thank you for the call in.
Well, thank you. And we will indeed be going to a break. This is a Passions and Pastimes show on Maine Calling, and we are talking about fiber arts. We'll be right back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We are talking about fiber arts today on Maine Calling and learning all about the different kinds of fiber arts. Of course, there's no way to talk about it all in 1 hour, but we'd love to hear from you. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Betsy Dore, a fiber artist who sews and quilts, and she owns the Quilt Essential Shop in Auburn. She owned it for 26 years, and you teach and sell quilts. Thanks so much for calling in, Betsy. And I want to ask, if you've been doing this for so long, what you've noticed over the years, have the kinds of quilts that people are making changed? Have the kind of people who are coming into your shop and coming to classes changed?
Definitely. When I first started, which is, I hate to say it, but probably about 40 years ago, quilts were sort of like your grandmother's quilts, very kind of prescribed and repetitive, and the kind of quilt that most of the general public thinks about when they think of a quilt. And that has evolved now to more of an art form. There's so many different kinds of quilting going on these days. There's much more improvisational quilting where, you know, you just start somewhere, you have no prescribed idea in your mind, and you just kind of go with it. And it's just wonderful to see the quilt world broadening to incorporate so many more diverse thoughts about what quilting and sewing can be. So it really has changed a lot in that time.
Betsy, I know so many people would like to learn and are a little bit intimidated. What would you say to someone who sees one of these extraordinary quilts that you or others have done and thinks, I could never do that?
That's a really good question, because I think so many people think about themselves as, you know, they will say, I'm not a creative person. And I think that creativity lives in all of us. And so I often demonstrate quilting at various events. And last year I did it at the Shaker Museum, and I was amazed at how I set it up so that people could kind of try out what I was doing. And I think, you know, things like that are a really good way of interesting people in what they might be able to do, and break it down into pieces small enough so that it seems like something that they can accomplish. So I think exposure is a really important part, and making classes accessible and simple enough so that people can feel successful.
Well, Betsy, thanks so much for calling in. That's Betsy Dore, quilting expert and teacher. Chris Antonak, I want to go to you for just a second, because one thing I did not say is that you have called yourself a rug hooker. But if somebody is thinking about the rugs that you've done, they might be thinking about something traditional. I looked on the web. They are not traditional. How do you think about your projects? What do you think before you start?
Oh, Jennifer, thank you for asking that question. First of all, rug hooking is, there are traditional rug hookers, and they, you know, work on patterns that have been stamped out ahead of time and so forth. But if you like to draw, you can draw your own pattern on a piece of primitive linen, and then look through the materials you have around the house, or you can go to the Goodwill, and anything that you can pull through the linen, you can put into a rug or a wall hanging. So when I approach a project, I just create something that pleases me. I'm not really interested in what will sell or what will appeal to other people. I like color. I like texture. If it glitters, so much the better. I throw that in too. So, you know, my things wouldn't necessarily appeal to everybody, but they certainly appeal to me, and they give me a lot of pleasure. And I have found other people like them too.
Calling in now is Dr. Donald Talbot, a board member of Maine Fiber Arts and associate professor and visual arts program coordinator at Mount Aloysius College. His fiber artwork has been seen in shows and galleries across the U.S., his studio in Lisbon Falls. Thanks for calling in, Donald.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What kind of fiber arts are you involved with?
Well, I do many things. Currently, I am pretty much a sewer and quilter, making wall pieces primarily. But over the years, I have done many, many techniques. I started off doing needlepoint, and that eventually led me to want to knit, and then I started spinning, and then I became a weaver. So I've tried many things over the years, and some of the things I've tried and decided they were not for me, and I abandoned them, and there are some things I've stuck with. So I primarily stuck with the weaving and the sewing and the quilting. Those have been my primary areas of interest.
What's curious to me is it seems as though it's a good thing we didn't do a main calling program just on knitting or just on weaving or just on quilting, because it seems to me as though people who are into fiber arts are really into multiple fiber arts.
That's true. I think that is absolutely true. I've been listening to some of your program, and I think my path to where I am today, where it started, is very much like that of many people. They'll see something, they want to try it, and they either enjoy it or they don't. And I've given up a lot of things that I haven't enjoyed over the years, but there are other things that have stuck with me. And all along the way, you learn a technique and you say, well, I'm not going to be a person always printing fabric, but somewhere along the way, I may need to know how to print on fabric, or I may need to know how to do dye work, certain types of dye work. And so none of it gets wasted. Some of it gets put on the back burner until you need it again. So that's sort of what I do with my own teaching at the college. My students learn a little bit of everything. Even if they don't enjoy it all, they at least I try to teach them a little bit of everything. And everything they produce isn't necessarily a great work of art, but I think it's important for them to know how a basket is made and how that comes into being. And I think it's important for them to know how to thread a needle and how to hand sew. And most of them don't know how to do that. They don't even know how to iron clothes anymore. They haven't used an iron. When I set up the iron and the ironing board in the art room, they have no idea what that's for. So it's a whole different world than the one that I grew up in.
I think that's a really interesting insight. I have kids in their 20s, and you're right. as hard as I've tried to tell them that this is important, it doesn't seem to stick. Let me ask you, though, Dr. Talbot, what do you say to people who have an assumption that fiber arts, that knitting and quilting and things like that, are something that women do?
Well, that is, of course, obviously the perception, but historically, men have been involved in fiber production forever. I mean, they've always been part of the process. And though we tend to be in the minority, it's really not a gender-linked activity by any means. And one of the things I discovered, I went back to school at midlife in the 1990s, and I was in a weaving program in North Carolina. And there were very few men, but what I was told by my instructor there was that a lot of the men who did get involved with weaving were really interested in the machine and how the machine worked and how to make the machine work, and that oftentimes the women coming in were interested more in the product that was made. And that I sort of discovered is somewhat true. I think sometimes the men may approach it in a slightly different way. I know I became interested in spinning because I just had to know how that spinning wheel worked. So that was, I mean, that may be true of women as well, but I know for the men that I've talked to, I think they're interested in that, how all these things, these gadgets work and why they work and how do they function.
I love it. And that actually dovetails with my life experience and a young man in my life who sewed our Halloween costumes one year and said, well, it's a machine. So that's how I know how to do it. But Dr. Talbot, I so appreciate
exactly.
you calling in and being a part of the program today. Associate Professor at Mount Aloysius College, also with Maine Fiber Arts. I'm going to follow up on his call with Lynn in Edgecombe. Lynn, Dr. Talbot was talking about teaching college students. You teach younger students, right?
No, I teach grandchildren, but my grandchildren go to the Waldorf School in Blue Hill, Maine, and that school teaches all their preschool, the kindergarten and the lower grades, to knit, all genders, all people, and through these years, these children have been enabled now to give gifts at holidays, birthdays, birthday parties, that they've made instead of purchasing things. And the offshoot is that they give a piece of themselves. And when you see a child give a gift that they've made, they are more excited than the recipient of the gift. So that is a piece that I think is something that could be moved through all schools and all summer camps. And it also is a brain relaxation. It is therapy for everyone. The other piece that I wanted to comment on is that I'm a rug hooker. Chris, you draw your own pieces. I'm a traditional rug hooker. And the piece that I have perhaps enjoyed the most of rug hooking is the camaraderie of the people that we get together with. And this has been going way back. Women on islands, when they were alone, would get together for quilting bees or hook-ins. And it gives you support, it gives you friendship, it gives you camaraderie, and it also gives you feedback on being creative. So this art has fed me for over 30 years, and I thank all of you out there for being the ones to do that for me. And then I'm going to end with our little hooking group in Damariscotta is planning on a rug show on September 7th. It's a Saturday at the Round Pond Schoolhouse. It is free. And you will see a plethora of all different kinds of rugs and different kinds of hooking, and it should be a lot of fun. So, Jennifer, thank you for doing this, and I'll end with that.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for calling in and for articulating so well some of the feelings many people have about these hobby, craft, art, all three. Thank you, Lynn, for calling in. And Chris, anybody who's been part of a knitting club can relate to what she's talking about with her rug hooking circle.
Absolutely. And I'm actually in that same group with Lynn, and it's a very inspiring rug hooking group. And every time we go and congregate, I always am so inspired and motivated to keep doing what we do.
Joining us now, Judith Daniels, a contemporary artist who has been involved with painting, weaving, rug restoration, photography, and felting. Hi, Judith. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Nice
well,
to
some,
be here.
Yeah, some people use felting to make cute little animals and crafts. I understand you have taken felting into new directions. Tell us what you make.
Well, recently I'm making vessels and wall pieces, but I have made scarves, shawls, clothing, but the most recent work are the vessels and the wall pieces. Mm. So.
And you focus on felting. Is that currently what you're doing primarily?
It is, yes. I do other things, too, where I'll, shibori dye or paint silk, but it's to go into the felt making. So I do, you use wool and other kind of fibers like that, and then you can also felt silk or other kinds of fibers into the wool.
I'm going to read you an email, Judith, that came into the show today and see what you think of it. This is from Bernice. Bernice writes, for people challenged with many fiber art forms because of unsteady hands, consider giving wet felting a try. The possibilities to play and create with fiber and color without fine motor skills are unlimited. Would you agree?
Oh, I would totally agree. Yes. Yeah. I mean, felting is unlimited anyway. I mean, there's so many different kind of things that you can make, and it isn't, it's not something of perfection or precision. You can become more precise with it, but you don't have to. And I think that was one of the first things that actually drew me to it.
And let me ask you about this question of fiber arts as fine art and whether or not fiber artists are being accepted in a way that they maybe didn't used to be. Do you feel as though you are accepted by galleries and museums and other artists?
Yes. Yeah. I've had work in galleries now since I moved to Maine, since I've been doing vessels more and the wall pieces more than the clothing, even though they do have clothing and, scarves and shawls. Some people show that in galleries also. So, it's definitely changing. I think it'd be nice if it changed even more. But there seems to be a division where something is called fine art more. But it's the other kind of work that might be the vessels and stuff like that. People still think of it as more craft. To me, it doesn't matter. It's all the same creative work. So I guess your motivation in making it can be different, but I like being on the border of art and craft myself.
Well, Judith, I so appreciate you giving us a call. Judith Daniels, a contemporary artist. I'm going to read an email and then go to another break. This is from Chris. She writes, I had to laugh at Chris Antonak's comment about being a fiber addict. I also claim to be addicted, and I'm worse. I claim to be a fiber pusher, getting others hooked on fiber-related activities. We always have to explain that spinning is not done on a stationary bike. And she also wants people to join you all at the Fiber Frolic at the Windsor Fairgrounds the weekend of June 1st. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic, the art of fiber and its popularity in Maine. My guest, Christine Mackey with Maine Fiber Arts and Chris Antonak with Fiber Frolic. Join our conversation. If you're quick, 1-800-399-3566 or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Christine Mackey, for those who are listening and saying, yes, yes, I'd like to take a class. Where do I start? What's your answer?
We have workshops at Maine Fiber Arts. There are workshops happening in yarn shops all around the state. And we have a small learning guide, a book that is free online called Learning Fiber Arts. And it's a listing of 100 places in Maine where people can take classes. It's free online, or we have a $15 book here at Maine Fiber Arts in Topsom.
All right. Well, we'll find that and put it in the Maine Calling newsletter. On the line with us now is Jill Venditulli, who is a needlepoint artist. Her studio and gallery are in a 1790s era farmhouse in southwestern Maine. Thanks for joining us, Jill. That sounds very romantic.
Well, it is. I've been very fortunate to have space here that I could both be an artist and be the person who people get to see and talk to directly when they come to visit me here.
So tell me about the kind of needlepoint you do and how you came to do that kind.
Well, I just decided years ago that I wanted a handcraft and a pastime, and so knowing that my family had hogged most of the other ones up, I chose needlepoint because they hadn't touched that one. So I learned through a kit, and then I decided after I had mastered the technique and my tension and fallen in love with it that I would start designing my own. And I found I call them the Centerfold Boys. They were three kings. They were a mosaic in Ravenna, Italy, and I thought, this is perfect. It's squares, and I work on a grid. So 3 weeks of drawing and 8 months of stitching, and I produced my first original piece 34 years ago.
Wow. What would you tell someone who thinks about needlepointing? Boy, is something their grandma did, something that takes forever, something that, you know, it is old-fashioned.
Well, it can be old-fashioned, and that's a choice people make. I have chosen to explore it as a contemporary art form. Most of my subject matter is fairly contemporary, from disasters of drought and hurricanes to the intensity and distortion of childhood memory. It can be what you want it to be. That's the wonderful thing about fiber. It is flexible, and you can expand on it as much as you want.
Well, Jill, thank you so much for calling in. Jill Venditulli is a fiber artist, a needlepoint artist based in southwestern Maine. I'm going to go to Corey calling from Unity. Hi, Corey. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to speak to your age range of people that are interested in the fiber arts. And we have Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm in Unity, Maine. We are open for tours to the public. And we see everyone from preschool groups all the way up to seniors, nursing home groups, and you name it, a lot of the different scouts groups. And one of the activities that we usually start with the young kids, which is fantastic and they love it, is felting soap. So we just sheared our alpacas last Saturday. We have all this additional fiber that we don't put into the yarn process. but we leave it for the projects at the farm. And I always have people calling and asking if I have fiber available. But when the kids' felt soap or the nursing home groups come and they get to take a bag of fiber, a pack of fiber home with them and do crafts, and we have people that are all ages and sometimes just discovering fiber art. We have folks that have graduated to being incredible artists from coming to the farm.
So Corey, I need to ask you, because I only recently learned the answer to this. What do you mean when you say felting soap?
So we sell felted soap, but it's just a bar of soap wrapped in the raw fiber. And when kids come, you take a bar of soap, you dip it in water, and you take the fiber, you wrap it around the soap, put it in a little baggie, and work it, just massage it until that fiber clings to the soap, and you leave it out to air dry, and now you have a bar of soap to use, and your fiber is your built-on scrubby, which prolongs the life of your soap, and it creates great lather, and they can use all different colors of fiber, create their own art with it, but they have a product they can use later that's a lot of fun, and they make it with more elaborate art, but anybody can do it.
Well, Corey, thanks so much for calling in and talking about your alpacas and the work that you do. That's Corey calling from Unity. An email here from Mary. Our fiber group in Orono started more than 20 years ago with mostly faculty or retired folks. But in recent years, we've had student members, too. There are student fiber groups on the UMaine campus now as well. It has been great to see how many young, active, and aspiring fiber artists have been attending the Maine Fiber Frolic in recent years. Lots of youthful energy and creativity. So, Mary, thank you for that email. Chris, have you encountered many young college-age people over the years? Is that an age range where people tend to catch the bug?
Well, I think definitely, you know, and I've talked to so many people whose grandmother taught them how to knit, not so much the mothers, but the grandmothers taught them. And then they just continued to do it. And when I go to large gatherings like the Fiber Frolic or the Rhinebeck Sheep and Wool Show, there is lots of young people that are there and so excited to, you know, to knit or spin or whatever, any fiber activity. So it does appeal to all ages.
I'm going to go to a couple emails here. This is from Mary. Maine Quilts 2024 Quilt Show at the Augusta Civic Center, July 25th to 27th, 9 to 5, with an opening night preview July 24th. 500 plus quilts, special exhibits, vendors, lectures, demos, raffles, air-conditioned, convenient, free parking. And she says to visit MaineQuilts.org. And then from the Children's Discovery Museum, the topic on Friday's show is very timely for us. The Children's Discovery Museum of Central Maine, located in Waterville, is currently planning a fiber fabrication and fiber arts installation for our new exhibit hall, which will open this summer. We are looking for donations of supplies, yarn, spinning wheels, knitting needles, etc., as well as local fiber artists could collaborate in teaching kids about fiber arts and bringing the exhibit to life. Anyone interested in helping can find contact information on our website, and that is childrensdiscoverymuseum.org. We'll go to Alice, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Alice. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you today?
Great.
I'm Alice Seeger. I run Belfast Fiber Arts. We're on High Street in Belfast between the Colonial Theater and the Beanbag Store. We have a community weaving studio and a maker space where studio artists we work together in a community. We create sustainable fashion. This is fashion that uses natural fibers, regionally sourced, very often natural dyes, which we've had dye workshops going on in our courtyard for the past few weeks. We also teach classes and workshops. We have a walk-in and weave program. You don't have to know anything about weaving to come in and give it a try. And I've been weaving for nearly 50 years, and it's my passion, and I love to share it with anyone who would like to know more about it.
All right. Well, Alice, thank you so much. Chris, is Alice's place in your book? Christine, excuse me?
Yes, I think they are listed. Great. I think they were just starting at the time when we did our book.
Wonderful. And we have an email from Catherine about the Madomic Fiber Arts Retreat held every summer in Washington, Maine. So, wow, wonderful things. This one's, there's two, July 22nd to 28th and 29th to August 4th. That sounds like a wonderful way to spend some time in Maine at a retreat doing fiber arts. We'll go to Jude calling from South China. Hi, Jude, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a dyer and I am a natural dyer, which means that I use plant materials. There are some insects, but they don't grow in Maine. And I predominantly use wool and other natural fibers like alpaca, et cetera, and some things that we can't grow here. But I also have a dye garden. I forage. I teach. I have a workshop at Fiber Frolic. And I want to make a plug for the St. George Historical Society's Fiber to Fabric event on Sunday in Tenants Harbor, which will have people demonstrating all sorts of things. I'm going to be there demonstrating natural dyeing, and I'm bringing some of my dyed wools, which I'm right now in my hands wrapping up some more skeins. And I'm one of those people who started as a little kid. I've been knitting about 70 years, doing dyeing for about 50. And I do a little weaving, a little sewing, a little quilting, a little crocheting, embroidery, you name it.
That's great. Well, Jude, thanks so much for calling in. And I want to say to everybody who's going to call in about an event or a workshop or hears about this program later, go ahead and go on today's Facebook post for Maine Calling and put in the comments information about your event, because then others can go back and see it later. So Jude, thank you so much for calling in. And Chris, I know you wanted to talk about some of the other workshops coming up at the Fiber Frolic.
Well, I really did. You know, as a fiber addict, I want to enable other people to become fiber addicts. And the way you do that is to learn how to do things. And the Maine Fiber Frolic has a bunch of great workshops: rug hooking, knitting and crochet, spinning, needle felting, toy making, natural dyeing, weaving, and how to take a raw fleece, which means a fleece that's just off the sheep and it hasn't been washed or anything, and how to wash it and prep it to do whatever you want to do with it. So I did want to throw that out there. And if you go to the fiberfrolic.com website, you can sign up for the workshops and get all the other information about everything else that's going on at the Frolic, which is on June 1st and 2nd. And thank you so much for letting me plug the Frolic again.
We have an email here. Hi, this is Helen York, once the New England champion spinner and owner of Aunt Rhody's. For about 30 years, I made a good portion of my living spinning and selling yarn fleeces from my herd of 75 sheep. It's nice to hear that the art and craft of fiber is going strong in the state of Maine. My love to you all. And that reminds me that I wanted to ask you, Christine, how often or how common is it for avid fiber artists, especially knitters, to dream of and someday have sheep?
Oh, fun question. Yes, so to me, it's different roads. I once thought of sheep, and it's just a lot to it. And a lot of people who raise sheep say, wow, they don't have time to knit. Yeah, it's a big endeavor to take on animals, and it's a big endeavor to take on knitting and get serious and get deep into it. So it's all good, though. All good lives we live in Maine.
And we like to support the local farmers that do all that work and create the product, that all we have to do is sachet in with our credit card or pocketbook and buy it. And that supports them in their work.
Let me ask you, you know, we heard the call out, the shout out from the Children's Discovery Museum, shout out for supplies. And I'm wondering, I suspect, Christine, there are many people listening that say, you know what, I used to be a knitter, or I used to be a crocheter, or I used to be a quilter, and I have all this yarn, I have all this fabric. What can I do with it? Where can I donate it that it will be of good use and somebody will love it in the future?
You can donate it to a school in your area. You can donate it to a nonprofit organization that is interested in that. I used to refer a lot of people to Spindleworks in Brunswick. I send looms up to Belfast Fiber Arts and to Maine College of Art as an apparel design program. And I send quite a few people to the used equipment tent that happens at the Maine Fiber Frolic June 1 and 2, where people just line up beforehand to get in. And there are looms and beautiful spinning wheels and all kinds of used equipment. It's almost our number one question that we get at Maine Fiber Arts what to do. But of course, there's Uncle Henry's and there are Craiglicks, and there's lots of things on social media, weaving groups and used equipment groups. Yes.
Well, I want to thank both of you. We could just keep on talking, but we're out of time. Christine Mackey, a photographer and fiber artist who founded Maine Fiber Arts. And Chris Antonak is a fiber craftswoman who is vice president of the Maine Fiber Frolic, June 1st and 2nd at the Windsor Fairground. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find past programs and sign up for our weekly newsletter at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.